This is the Stella Culinary School Podcast, Episode 17, Canapes. Found online at stellaculinary.com. My name is Jacob, and today we finish our garmage series with a quick little lesson on canapes, you know, those cute little bite-sized appetizer or hors d'oeuvres that you get at those fancy high-end cocktail parties. And canapes are normally served during the mingling time. They're walked around on little trays and pass, and people pick them up, a little napkin, a little glass of champagne, and ooh la la, you know, they pop them in their mouth. But a true great canapé is an amazing opportunity for the garmage chef to really kind of showcase their technique, whether it be in basic cooking techniques with the main protein, or flavor composition, textural composition, garnishing, some nice visual elements. And a canapé, it's important to remember, is the pre-sell to a dinner. So you want to make sure that you're always leading with your best foot forward, right? Like Mama always said, first impressions count, and they're the lasting ones. So your canapé is your opportunity to make a lasting first impression and to carry that over into an amazing dinner. So in this episode's discussion segment, we're going to talk about the four components of a canapé and what a canapé really is. And on its most basic level, a canapé is a one-bite hors d'oeuvre that is typically passed during a cocktail reception that precedes a nice sit-down dinner. Or it can also be a buffet-style dinner. But this is really going to take it to the next level for food and your guests. And at Stella, when we sell a party, when people come in and buy out the restaurant or they buy out our event center and they want to have a dinner, part of the package, unless they absolutely just don't want them for whatever reason, are a couple of pass canapés. Because especially when you're talking about, it's not like you have a group of four people going out to dinner, right? And you're all like, okay, let's just all hop in the same car and we'll drive up and we're going to eat dinner at 7 o'clock. A reception or a group dinner for, you know, something along the lines of 30 people upwards of over, you know, a few hundred, people are going to kind of straggle in. You know, the host is going to start there first. You know, get there, start to welcome people. But you want to leave open that hour to hour and a half leading up to dinner to allow people to arrive. Because normally at these dinners too, whether it's for a business function or a personal celebration like an anniversary or a wedding, you're normally seeing people in a context that you don't normally see them. So if you're having dinner with a bunch of people from work, you know, it's a more of a relaxed area. It's a more of a relaxed environment. Same thing with a wedding reception. When people are rolling up, you know, maybe you're seeing an uncle or an aunt or a cousin or a friend that you haven't seen for a year or more. And so you want to allow that time for people to mingle and break the ice with a nice glass of champagne or cocktail or a glass of wine. And you want to make sure that you have some nice hors d'oeuvres or canapes being passed around the room to tide them over till dinner, but also just makes it more festive. I mean, nothing says class than having a server walk around you with a beautiful tray of these little tiny arranged canapes. And the great thing about canapes is they're one bite of magic, right? I mean, we're talking about flavor structure and all the, you know, the last three episodes, we were really heavily focusing on flavor structure and the composition of a plate. And then we were talking about, in last episode, a composed salad, right, coming out of the cold kitchen or grand manger. So think of a canapé as a beautiful composed dish with amazing flavor structure distilled down into one single bite. It's the essence of a great dish. So a canapé is going to have four main components. It's going to have your base, your spread, your body, and your garnish. And when you think of it in those simple terms, a canapé really isn't that difficult, and it's going to allow you to singularly choose a base, a spread, a body, a garnish, taking into consideration how they're going to act together as far as textural elements or flavor structure or flavor components or seasoning. All right. So, for example, a nice base is something that people can pick up with their fingers. And sometimes, too, you know, I've been known to build canapés in little tiny shot glasses with a spoon or, you know, build them on forks or skewers. But bottom line, you have to understand that servers are passing these canapés around with nothing, just, you know, the tray and some napkins, some little cocktail napkins. So you have to think about execution. These people don't have a place setting of a plate, a knife, a fork, a napkin. So they need to be able to grab a cocktail napkin and grab a canapé and eat it, and preferably do this with one hand, because on the other hand is a glass of champagne, right? So it's important to always think about execution. And even more important, even beyond canapés, always when you're constructing a dish for somebody else, you need to put yourself in their shoes and think, how are they going to eat this? How is this going to work? How is this going to execute? And as a chef, execution is huge. It's the number one thing out there, right? Because it doesn't matter how great your food is, how beautiful it looks, how great it tastes. If you can't execute it, and if they can't eat it, and if they're uncomfortable eating it, then you've lost the battle before it's even started. So some nice bases just for basic canapés and finger foods is toast. You know, brioche, sourdough, crostinis, any sort of bread-based toast. You can also use water crackers. Flatbreads will work. And the thing with flatbreads, right, is they're kind of limp and flimsy. So it's not a bad idea to grill them or toast them. Give them a little bit of structure so they can hold a topping, right? So someone can easily pick them up off the tray and place them in their mouth. If you're not grilled and they're nice and, you know, limp and flopping around, then as soon as someone goes to pick them up, the topping is going to fall off and may spill all over their nice evening gown or their nice suit. And guess how much they're going to like you? Not too much. So you want to take that into consideration. Again, that's execution. So flatbread's good, but grill it first. Toast it. Maybe fry it into a chip. And for that matter, you can use potato chips. I'm not talking Lay's or Doritos here. I'm talking, you know, hand-slicing potatoes and soaking them in water and then, you know, frying them in hot oil until they have a beautiful golden caramelized brown, and, you know, dusting them with a little bit of home seasoning, whether it's salt and pepper, maybe a little bit of cayenne, maybe a little lemon zest, whatever it takes. But, you know, you can make a nice, beautiful fried chip out of potato or out of vegetables such as carrot or parsnip, anything that will fry up and be sturdy, and you can build a topping on that. Miniature polenta cakes also work well. Remember, we were talking about polenta in the starters episode. This is a great way to utilize leftover polenta, because you can pour it out into a sheet tray, and then you can go back after it sets up the next day and cut little discs out of the polenta sheet, and then fry them nice and crispy, so they're crispy on the outside, nice and creamy on the inside. And because they're fried, they're going to have a crust to them, and it's going to be easy for someone to go along and pick them up and eat them with their fingers. Also, fried wonton chips are great for beef tartare, ahi tartare, you know, delivering sort of an Asian-inspired protein on top of a fried wonton chip is a really great way to go. Now, the next is your spread. Now, most importantly, Your spread's going to play three roles. It's going to be a moisture barrier, an adhesive, and a flavoring agent. Now, the moisture barrier is important, especially something like a canapé that is a bread base. You're talking like brioche toast and sourdough crostinis. Because what happens is, picture this. I'm back in my kitchen with my crew, and we're getting ready to plate up some canapés. But they're not exactly served a la minute, right? They're going to be walked around this entire event, and people are going to pick at them. Maybe they want some, maybe they pass, maybe then they come back later and like, oh, no, yeah, I want some. But we need to get the canapés out so people have something in their hand to eat, to munch on. So it might take a few minutes to deliver that complete canapé, that one bite, from the time we finish plating to the time it makes its way around the room and it finishes and ends up in your hand. And then maybe you're sitting there talking, you're holding it in your hand, sipping on your champagne. Maybe you got that canapé in your hand, but you haven't actually eaten it yet. That whole time, if you don't have a barrier between the base and the topping, that base begins to sog out, and you're losing, most importantly, the structural integrity of that base, so it could collapse and fall all over them. And you're also losing the textural component, because most commonly, the crunch from your canapé or that bite of the texture, that chewiness of the texture is going to come from the base. And then the creaminess and savoriness of that texture is going to come from the topping. So you need a spread or a barrier in between to facilitate that so your base doesn't sog out. So the best spread to use for a canapé is a fat-based spread, because normally, anything that you put on top of your base is going to have some sort of water base in it. The seasoning is going to be water-based. It can be, you know, teriyaki sauce or sesame juice or whatever it is. Normally, you're going to season or flavor it. And just the natural moisture content that comes out of that topping, whether it's mushrooms or, you know, diced tomatoes, marinated tomatoes, it's going to have some sort of water content in it. And as you know, water and fat repel one another. So if you take that crostini and you spread it with a little bit of aioli, or maybe you just brush it with a little bit of olive oil, or even some roasted garlic oil, that small, thin, minuscule layer of fat is going to act as a barrier and a repellent to the water content that's contained within the topping or the main body of the canapé. So let's talk about the main body, which is also the main component. Normally, this is what the canapé is named after, right? Cherry tomato bruschetta, olive tapenade, ahi tartare, beef tartare, whatever it is that you're putting on top of your base, that is the main, that's the highlight, right? We were talking about last episode, your composed salads. And we're talking about having that one main ingredient highlighted and then having other ingredients playing a supporting role. So in that context, your body is the main ingredient. That is your money ingredient. That's what people are paying money for when they order those canapés. They're not paying money for your brioche toast or your fried wonton chips. They're paying money for the body that's delivered on top of that base, and your base is there for a textural and flavoral contrast to highlight that body. Now, if you're doing something like, you know, if you say you want to do like a crab salad or a shrimp salad on top of a piece of toast, and your seasoning base for that is aioli, right, or some sort of mayonnaise base or a fat-based seasoning, where you're going to toss it around, and you're basically going to make a crab salad using mayonnaise and, you know, whatever other ingredients and flavors you have in there. Because of that, you can go ahead and skip the spread component. You don't need the spread component because you've already mixed it into your main component or your body. But in the case of, say, like a beef tartare, where you're going to mix it with a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, maybe a little bit of Dijon mustard, maybe a little bit of a vinaigrette or a little bit of lemon juice and some, you know, some salt. All that is water-based components, right? So you want to make sure that you have some sort of barrier between that tartare and the base. And toasting the bread will help, obviously. But at a certain point, that will sog out as well. So after you toast it, I would recommend spreading it with a little bit of olive oil or some sort of nice, flavorful aioli. And you don't want it to take over. You just want it to be there as a barrier, a subtle flavor enhancement. So a nice little thin, brush or a spread will do the trick. Now the final component is your garnish. And this is going to be both a usable garnish, right? Edible. You always want to put an edible garnish on your dish, which sounds like common sense, but you'd be surprised. It's not necessarily common sense, but it's also going to lend visual appeal to the finished canapé. And this can be anything from, I like to use fresh herbs. You can use a citrus supreme. You can use a little, leaf of an edible flower. But there are two rules, right? Number one is it has to be edible. And number two, it has to enhance the flavor of the overall canapé and not take away from the main component, which is your money ingredient. So in today's technique segment, we're going to actually talk more about how to construct a canapé. We already went over the basics of what a canapé is and its different components and why you need those components there. But let's talk about the actual composition of a basic canapé. Now, the four components we talked about in the discussion segment, the base, spread, body, and garnish, if at all possible, you want each of the four components to have contrasting colors. Again, these are pretty little appetizers that are circulated through a party. You want them to pop. You want them to have eye appeal. You want them to say, hey, come eat me. I'm tasty. I'm delicious. I look beautiful. Come eat me, right? And you do that with contrasting colors. Now, don't add color for the sake of adding color. No, bad. Shame on you. But when thinking about the composition of your canapé, this is one of the main things that you want to take into consideration. And I know that sounds sort of like paradoxic, right? But what I want to get across is this, is sometimes people add color for the sake of adding color. And I've had multiple people, not naming any names or titles, but tell me this, right? Add that, it needs some green. Add this, it needs some red. Do a little couple of dots here. Do a little sprinkling of this there. But why? Why? Because it needs color. Wrong. Wrong answer. Okay? You don't want your dish to ever look monochromatic, right? You want it to pop and have visual appeal. After all, like they always say, you eat with your eyes before you eat with your stomach. But to add color for the sake of adding color without taking into consideration the flavor structure and what effect it's going to have on the overall flavor of your dish is a culinary sin. Just thought you should know. So obviously, flavor structure is immensely important in a canapé. And each component of your canapé should have a contrasting flavor and textural element. So to put this into perspective, let's do a little bit of a test run. All right, let's talk about a very simple and basic canapé, which would be smoked salmon and sour cream, all right, or creme fraiche, whatever you want to use. So let's look at this. So you have smoked salmon. Smoked salmon, that's the most expensive product on the canapé. All right, it's not your sour cream, it's not your base, it's not your garnish, it's a smoked salmon. That's what you as the chef are paying money for. So your number one goal is don't screw up that smoked salmon. Instead, let's look at how to enhance it. So what kind of base would you use for the smoked salmon? Well, I like flatbread, because smoked salmon is delicate, right? And you want a nice little bread. But a large sourdough crostini, it's kind of robust. It kind of has this hardiness to it. It might overtake the salmon. So a little slice of pita, a little wedge of pita, maybe a pita chip, right? So you cut it into wedges and you fry it. And now you have a nice crispy pita chip, and that crispy texture is going to contrast nicely with the soft, chewy texture of the smoked salmon. Now let's look at your spread. Let's look at the barrier, which is your sour cream. The sour cream can be just straight sour cream, or you can doctor a little bit. Maybe throw in a little bit of chives, maybe throw in a little bit of garlic or onion powder, some salt, just to kind of take that sour cream to the next level. A little bit of citrus, right? That acid, nice lemon juice, little squeeze of lemon juice into that sour cream is going to brighten up that flavor because both salmon and sour cream have a fatty component to it. So that acid, that squeeze of lemon, is going to brighten up both those fatty components and open up the flavor profile a little bit more. So you have your pita chip, you have your nice sour cream spread. On top of that, you're going to put prominently your slice of smoked salmon and a little garnish. Now here you can do a little tiny, like out of a squeeze bottle, a dollop of your creme fraiche or your flavored sour cream, just a little dot. And to that dot, you can stick a nice little, maybe a quarter inch baton of chive or a little sprig of dill. Dill and salmon go great together. Dill, salmon, and sour cream go great together. Now, what if you want to make this gluten-free, right? Well, a common flavor pairing is salmon, sour cream, and cucumber. So you could use a channel knife if you want to, you know, run a little channel down, you know, three to five channels down the side of a cucumber, kind of cut in those grooves. And this is just purely for aesthetics. And you can take that channeled cucumber, or not channeled, depending upon how you want to do it, and you cut it into quarter-inch slices, and that's going to be your base. Now, that cucumber base is going to have a nice crispness to it. It's going to be easy for the guests to come along and pick it up, and it's a nice substitute for bread or for a starch base. And again, on top of that, you're going to put a little tiny spread or a little tiny dollop of sour cream, both for flavor and for your barrier, because cucumber has a lot of water in it, right? And then you're going to put your salmon on top of that. And then from there, cucumber and dill go great together. So I would put a little tiny sprig of dill. And there you have a great, simple salmon canapé. And you could even take it to the next level. You can garnish it with a little bit of a salmon roe or trout roe. That salty brininess of the roe is going to kind of take it to the next level. Or if you really want to go real high-end, a little bit of Ocetra caviar right on top. Because Ocetra, sour cream, or Ocetra and creme fraiche, more specifically, go fabulous together. And then you're using the salmon, right? Now, let's look at that for a second, though, because if you're topping your salmon canapé with that Ocetra caviar, now what's your money ingredient? Your caviar, right? I mean, your salmon, your smoked salmon is like the bottom of my shoe compared to the Ocetra that's on top of it. So that doesn't mean totally dismiss the salmon, but now you want to make sure that you're constructing flavors that are going to really promote the caviar, which is your true money ingredient. And in this case, the salmon, the creme fraiche, whether it's a pita chip or a actual cucumber slice, those will all work great and enhance the overall flavor of the caviar. So that would be a good choice as well. Now, like we've talked about before in this podcast, for me, a big part of Grand Manger is charcuterie. And it's such a large art form, though. It deserves not only its own series of audio lectures, but also its own completely separate series of video techniques, which I do have in the works. And I've already shot a video on how I make my duck pate and also how I make my trotterterrine, which is a cool video because you can make that trotterterrine using nothing but plastic wrap. And it's a really cool technique. And those will be part of our charcuterie video series available in HD on iTunes. But if you can't wait for that, go and check out youtube.com/stellaculinary, and you can watch all those videos there. But the reason I mention this is because charcuterie, which is really the master skill of a great Grand Manger chef, goes great for canapés, right? Because it's really your time to shine. If you have a beautiful terrine or a beautiful pâté, And charcuterie and bread go hand in hand. So it's stupid easy. All the hard work comes from making that beautiful pate or that beautiful terrine or that beautiful piece of cured meat and aging it properly. But once it's done, once it's complete on the day of execution, when you come to actually put out that dinner, it's simple. You know, it's just like, if you got a good piece of charcuterie, a good pate, good terrine, all you got to do is get out of its way, you know, and let it do its magic. So you're going to toast up some nice sourdough crustinis or some nice homemade bread or some nice homemade brioche, and you're going to put a little slice of your duck pate on there, maybe a little orange segment, because orange and duck go great together, and I love orange and duck pate just in general. So the way that you could do this and the way that we do this at Stella is, well, you know, we bake our bread, which is done from a sourdough starter, or leavened from a natural sourdough starter. We bake it fresh daily in our wood fire oven. You take that, you cut it into crostinis, toast it up a little bit in the oven. Then I'm going to put a little slice of duck pate on top, and I don't need a spread in between because the duck pate contains enough fat as my topping to where I don't need a barrier. It's not a water-based topping. And on top of that, I'm going to place a nice little orange segment, okay? If you want to take that to the next step, underneath the duck pate, in between your base of the bread and your pate, you can add a little bit of frisée. Remember we were talking about frisée a couple episodes ago when we were talking about our greens? Frisée has that nice bitter crunch to it that does a great job at cutting through fat. So to really enhance the flavor of that pate, which is your money ingredient, you're going to go bread, little bit of frisée, maybe toss in some vinaigrette. Maybe you add in a little bit of pickled red onions to cut, you know, that sourness kind of cuts through, get the spice from that pickled red onion. Then you're going to put your pate on top, a little bit of carrot orange segment, or a little blood orange segment, a little bit of fleur de sel, maybe one little single beautiful leaf of tarragon on top of that orange segment, and talk about a gorgeous, gorgeous canapé that's fairly easy to execute. All the hard work comes in making that pate in the first place, which again, you can watch the whole video on that, and it's going to show you the proper technique to make that. But once the pate is done, all you got to do is slice and plate. And you pass it around, and it has, not only does it have a visual appeal, but great charcuterie is really your chance as a chef to show off your skills, because charcuterie is an art form. And it's one of those things where it's fairly simple. You know, you can't mask poorly made charcuterie with a lot of different ingredients. In fact, poorly made charcuterie, at the very least, tastes horrible, and at the very worst, it'll kill you. You know, so when you master that charcuterie technique, a great avenue to really showcase that is through your canapés, because you're forcing them on people, right? They're nothing big. It's not like you're serving them a whole course throughout the meal. So if your guest may be a little bit squeamish about pate or cured meats, it's not like you're saying, hey, you know, your first course is going to be this, you know, I'm forcing you to eat it. It can be one of your three or four canapés that you're passing during that cocktail hour. And when they eat it and enjoy it, it's something that's noteworthy that they can talk about. They can say, hey, you know, I had this head cheese that was, it was literally compressed meat that was made from a pig's head. And yeah, I mean, I know it sounds weird, but it was fantastic. Or I had this duck pate that was made from the gizzards and the hearts and the liver of the duck. And it was absolutely fabulous on the homemade bread. And it's a talking point, right? And it's going to send people away talking about your food. And not only that, more importantly, it's your pre-sell into the meal. You want to get people in a festive mood. You want to place those canapés in front of them. You want them to eat them. You want them to enjoy them. You want a little bit of a salty tinge to them, which comes from the charcuterie, because it's going to force them to drink more champagne, and it's going to make them happy, and they're going to sit down, and they're going to love your meal, because, you know, you start any meal off with a couple glasses of champagne, and, you know, much more easier to impress. That's just my opinion. Now, beyond simple flavor structure, there are a couple of rules for past canapés, or even plated canapés as part of a buffet line. And you want to keep in mind that this is more for large parties than anything else. So number one, you never want your canapé platters to go past 30% empty. If there's a certain psychological feel that you're like people never want to take that last canapé. They never want to, you know, grab the last couple. It makes them feel like they're hogs, which is, you know, understandable, but it's also, you know, it's my job as a chef to feed you. I don't want you to feel uncomfortable eating my food. After all, you've paid good money. You've come to my restaurant. You're there to eat my canapés and my food. But there is definitely that mental block once the canapé tray gets below 30%. Not to mention that after about, 30% full, the canapé tray starts to look messy and kind of disheveled and doesn't look appetizing. So you need to train your servers, if you have actual servers passing your canapés, they need to know to bring back that canapé tray when it's about 30% full. At that point, you're going to take it into your kitchen and you're going to consolidate down onto a fresh, clean plate and send it back out for another round. Now, whenever past appetizers are on a buffet layout, you always want a sense of plenty. Again, people don't want to feel like hogs. People don't want to feel like they're taking everybody else's food. So you want to make sure that you convey that feeling of plenty. You never want a buffet line to look sparse. You want it to look like there's plenty of food and that it's welcoming them to come and grab the food and to eat it. Now also too, just a general rule of thumb, when you're passing canapés as part of a reception for dinner, and this could be, having canapés or little appetizers out for a Super Bowl party or for Thanksgiving, it doesn't matter. But if you're going to feed them dinner after the canapés, the general rule of thumb is you want to have at least two canapés, and you want to have 1.5 to 2 canapés of each per person. So for a past party or a reception hour that's going to last about an hour to hour and a half before dinner, 4 individual canapés per person total is sufficient. Because normally at that point too, once those canapés run out, it's a perfect time to say, hey, canapés are gone, let's sit down for dinner. It's a good timing aspect. Now, if you want to throw a party that's purely canapé based, you want to throw a cocktail party where people are just drinking wine and champagne and cocktails, and the canapés are being passed around the room, you want to plan for about 12 to 14 canapés per head. And that's just to give you something to go off of. And each client and each person is going to want something different. But if you plan for 4 canapés per person before a 3 to 4 course meal, or you plan 12 to 14 canapés for a cocktail party without any other food served, you're going to be golden. So in this episode's culinary quick tip, we're going to talk real quick about the actual plating of your past apps, your canapés, and there's a couple of finer points that I want to go over. So depending upon what you're using for your base, some bases are more slippery than others. And you got to take those whole canapés that are all built on this base and you have to put them on a plate. And that plate has to be stable enough to be able to, walk around the room and have people take canapés off of it. So sometimes you're going to want some sort of glue there to work as an adhesive. And no, I'm not talking about that stuff that you ate in the first grade. I'm talking about some sort of element that you can put underneath the base, between the base and the plate, that's going to hold it in place. Now, sadly, a lot of people's cure for this problem is leftover mashed potatoes. They take leftover mashed potatoes, they put them in the piping bag, they put the piping bag in the microwave, and they heat them up, and they put little tiny little dots of mashed potatoes on the plate without taking into consideration the flavor structure or anything, right? And I've seen it done. I've been forced to do it before, okay? So mashed potatoes will work to a certain extent, but they're not the end-all be-all, right? I mean, we've spent so much time on flavor structure. So if mashed potatoes go, then you can use them. If they don't go, then don't use them. I mean, it's that simple. But really what you want is you just want some sort of wet element underneath that canapé that's going to stick that base to the plate. And it can be anything from a sauce, an aioli, the mashed potatoes, some sort of starch. If you're doing a canapé paste on a wonton chip, with a little bit of Asian inspiration, you can use a little, like, 1 or 2 rice granules. And I'm talking like 1 or 2 rice granules. I'm not talking like a mound of rice. Just something that you can kind of press on the plate and you can stick them there. Also, what really, really helps is to hire servers who understand how to pass canapés without swinging their arms and sliding the plates around. Because if you have one of those, then normally you don't have to put any glue underneath the canapés to begin with. But that's just something that you want to think about when plating. Also, too, you want to look at the visual appeal of the canapés. you want to plate them in nice lines, right, down the platter, whether it's square or oval or round. You want to do something that makes it look nice and neat and clean. You want there to be some sort of lines. Think about when you're driving down the freeway and you drive past a nice orchard and how they're planted in lines. You look down the lines, you see the da-da-da-da-da. You know, you're going down, you're looking through those gaps in between the orchards. And obviously they're planted, you know, they're not planted like that for my own personal visual enjoyment, but nevertheless, it looks nice, right? So you want to do the same thing with your canapes. You want to have nice clean lines with spaces in between. You don't want the plate to look overcrowded. You don't want it to look like a jumbled heaping mess. If you have some negative space, some gaps, some lines in between those canapes, it's going to really draw the eye to your canapé and most importantly, your... That's right, your money ingredient. Also, too, a little bit of, you know, plating askew or on the bias will work nicely. So if you're plating, say, like half of a slice of a baguette, and you're using like half a slice of baguette for the base for your canapé, plating it linearly, where, you know, just like, you know, top to bottom, where just the baguette slice is just running straight down in a line, doesn't look as visually appealing as maybe plating it corner to corner, where you have, you know, think of it this way, right? The top part of your baguette slice is going to be the half line, where you cut that crostini in half, and the bottom part is going to be your rounded crust, right? So if you plate that, you know, cut line to rounded crust, cut line to rounded crust, all the way down in a straight line, it's going to look a little contrived. It's not going to look that good. However, you place it corner to corner, so you take a corner of that crostini and you put it in alignment with the heel or the rounded edge of the crostini before it, it's going to give you a little bit more visual appeal, especially when plated on a square plate. And you always want to build your canapés off of your platters to keep those nice, clean lines. So, for example, if you're doing like some sort of tapenade or a bean bruschetta or whatever it is you're doing, you want to make sure that you know, what we do in the kitchen is we take a large sheet tray and we just lay out our bases, right? We put it on our spreads and then we go back and we put on our toppings, right? Our money ingredient. And at this point, you can either garnish them or you can wait till they're on the plate to garnish them. But you want to build at least the first three components, the base, the spread, the body, off of the platter, because that way, if you have anything fall off during the building process, it's not going to scum up and gunk up your platter. And that way, you can take those nice built canapés and move them to your serving platter or tray, and you can have control over the look of those nice clean lines. And then from there, you can do a nice little chive garnish, maybe a little random sprinkling of your all-purpose seasoning, you know, your magic little secret ingredient, maybe a little sprinkling of some micro herbs or greens, whatever you want to do to embellish the overall look and feel and visual appeal of that plate. But those clean lines and building those canapés off of the plate are going to give you a much cleaner looking presentation than having stuff scattered around the edges of your all-purpose seasoning, you know, your magic little secret ingredient, maybe a little sprinkling of some micro herbs or greens, whatever you want to do to embellish the overall look and feel and visual appeal of that plate. But those clean lines and building those canapés off of the plate are going to give you a much cleaner looking presentation than having stuff scattered around the edges. And that's it for this episode of the Stella Culinary School Podcast. Thank you so much for completing the Garde Manger series. Go on over to stellaculinary.com, take the quiz. Check out the forum, check out the show notes at slash SES17.